sweet silver bells all seem to say, throw cares away, Christmas is here, bringing good cheer to young and old, meek in the bold. Ding dong, ding dong, that is the song, with joyful ring, all caroling, one seems to hear words of good cheer from everywhere, filling the air.
I guess it must be Christmas time. Hi, this is Rick Hogan filling in or doing his best to fill in for John Williams, who is someplace. I'll be here for the next 2 hours with the astonishing Elif Garis producing as she does for John, but she learned to produce doing my Sunday show, and the greatest engineer in America, Bob Ferguson, doing what engineers do. I worked with Bob for almost 10 years on that Sunday Papers morning show, and I still have not even grasped his full artfulness. So, let's enjoy. My first guest is a prolific author named Greg Borzo, whose latest book is likely to be his best-selling book. He has written about Chicago's fountains. He's written about various transportation systems around town, from bikes to L's. This book has caused something of a sensation. It is going, a story is going to appear in Sunday's Tribune by me, but in this new modern method of journalism, it was posted online a Tuesday at some time, and the response is amazing. What's your favorite restaurant, ladies and gentlemen? Not your favorite current restaurant, your favorite restaurant that died. The book is called Lost Restaurants of Chicago. Greg, welcome to the show. Don't you think these studios are pretty nice?
This is great. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Don't be silly. You've been one of my favorite guests for a long time. And I have to say, even though it may not have the cultural import of your Fountains book or your transportation books, this thing is a joy because I may have spent or misspent my life, but to go through this book and say, oh, yeah, I was there. Oh, yeah, I was drunk there. Oh, yeah, I skipped out on a bill here. Oh, yeah, I remember the bourbon on the rocks at this place. How many places are in this book? You must have counted them.
Oh, there's over 130. But only, maybe 50 that are described in great detail.
Well, but even the ones that aren't described in great detail, and they're lovely pictures of a number of them, too. You know, I'm looking now at page 19 in Schaller's Pump, which is a relatively recent restaurant death. Basically, restaurants vanish. Why? Their time has come. Or in the case of Schaller's, Mr. Schaller died in his 90s, and the tax bill came due, and it was too much, right?
Because he was actually living on the premises, so they had a special tax status that they lost, unfortunately, when he passed away. Many reasons that restaurants go out of business. First of all, half of all restaurants close within the first year.
And people never realize that. That's a striking figure, because some of the restaurants that open are very fancy.
For sure, and very expensive to open.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a very difficult business to succeed in. And so for some of these restaurants described in the book that have lasted 50, 80, more than 100 years, it's really incredible.
Well, there was one place that totally, totally intrigued me. Was a place, Bygone, of course, named oddly, I thought, the New York New York restaurant, which was on Clark Street, which I know none of you ever went to. But here, the New York Kitchen was its name. It was on Clark Street. And in 1887, it felt it necessary, as Greg Borzo writes, to tell people on the menu that, quote, no scraps taken back into the kitchen and cooked over. That's the kind of thing I'd read on a menu and would walk out immediately saying, that's a lie. You must reheat these scraps. This must have been, Greg, you told me that you came to this book because you're a great Chicago historian. And in just talking to people all the time and giving presentations, that you would always hear when people would tell a story of Chicago, invariably it would include, and then we went to dinner at.
Sure, and the food memory and the location memory just locks in your mind. You can hold that for decades. And so many people remembered prom night or a birthday party or some real special occasion. And just the name of the restaurant sparks that memory, brings back the flavor of the food and the ambiance and everything.
Well, and the good times.
Mostly
nobody remembers a restaurant because they got sick there, or do they?
Well, here's one example. Since the book came out, I've gotten a lot of reactions from
people. Oh, I can imagine.
And so one woman looked at the book and said, oh, BG Foods. That was a kind of a fast food sandwich shop. She said, that's where my dad proposed to my mom. But she didn't like it, so he had to do it again at a nicer restaurant later.
Well, I hope the marriage lasted. You do write in here. You do write in your lovely introduction. You write, restaurants feed body and soul, and the ones we've lost can give us a taste of where we've been and who we are. That is undeniably true. That is on a page with a picture of the Black Hawk restaurant. One of the nice things about the book, and you're going to spend all the way to a quarter two on here, is talking, you really give credit to some of the great restaurateurs in this town.
Charlie Trotter.
Eli Shulman.
Yes.
Arnie Morton.
Mm-hmm.
Don Roth of the Black Hawk
yes.
fame. Before we get into specifics, and I just want to plow through the book and mention names, and people can pull off the road and start crying about the wonderful meal they had there. That what have you learned? Or what does it take, to your mind, Greg Borzo, to run a successful restaurant?
Well, there's a lot of different models, but I think probably the most successful in Chicago has been the ones where the owner, the personality is out front, visiting with people, welcoming them. You mentioned Eli Shulman. He worked six nights a week in the restaurant. One day, Mayor Daley stopped by on a Sunday night, and from then on, Shulman worked seven nights a week.
That's perfect. Yeah. And Eli used to wear a watch and show it off plenty, because the watch was given to him by Frank Sinatra. And if Frank Sinatra had given me a watch, I would wear a watch.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know, when you realize, it's an interesting point, because I've known a lot of these guys too, that not only are they out there greeting the customers and saying hello, they're in the kitchen too.
Supervising, making sure the quality is there, et cetera. Another good example of exactly that would be Doug.
Doug Roth.
Doug Sohn.
Oh, my
hot
God.
Hot dogs. Because he would select the meat and perfect the recipe for the hot dogs that he served. And then he was sitting at the front counter taking the order of every single customer who came in over 13 years.
Doug Sohn of Hot Dogs wrote the foreword to Greg Borzo's Lost Restaurants of Chicago. We'll talk about how you got him to do that. And he asked to remember his fondest place has a very unusual, very, very unusual selection. We'll carry on with Greg Borzo after some commercials. Welcome back, WGN. Rick Cogan filling in for John Williams, talking to Greg Borzo, who has compiled a book called Lost Restaurants of Chicago, which is something of a graveyard, but not an unpleasant graveyard. You know, in the same way you can walk through a place like Graceland and go, oh my God, there's Sam Insull's grave, there's George Pullman's grave. You talk about places, Greg, I'm just going to start banging things around, like Cafe Bohemia that I went to. This was a place sort of near downtown that served hippopotamus, moose, elk, bear, and other exotic things. Shulian's Restaurant. Shulian's, which was noted for its tableside magic, which is where Tim Weigel proposed to one of his wives. The Kungsholm, which still exists as Lowry's on Ontario, I think.
Lowry's, yeah, the prime rib.
The prime rib. Talk to me for a second, Craig, because I think there are so many people who would have such fond memories. They did this miniature Grand Opera show.
Amazing. They had puppets, beautifully decorated, operated with rods from underneath, so there were no strings attached. And they did entire operas right there in a nice room next to the dining area. And it was quite popular. Naturally, they used recorded music, would have been records
sure.
at that time. But occasionally, an opera star would drop by and sing the part of that particular opera in person.
The Kungsholm did this from 1937 to 1971, meaning that I was there as a young child in the 50s or 60s. A place that I was never able to visit because it closed in 1953. It had opened in 1910 as a place that Bob Ferguson and I certainly would have frequented, called Colosimo's. Not only was this a lavish Jim Colosimo, Big Jim Colosimo, arguably the pioneering outfit boss of all time.
Founder, yeah. Thought to be the founder of the outfit.
I know. The restaurant was noted for a number. Anybody coming to town would have to go there after 1920 because that is where Jim Colosimo was killed in 1920. But the place went on, Greg Borzo. That's an interesting thing to me.
It did continue, even though the reviewers were quick to tell people that Capone didn't hang out there anymore. But it rode for, you know, on its
mostly
on its reputation.
Kind of, and mostly as a nightclub, too, yes?
Uh-huh.
You got Doug Sohn of Hot Dogs, one of the most. When Hot Dogs closed, you literally would have thought you were losing a member of the family. Remember, there was, and this is fairly recently, 2014, I think, there was a line, people waiting 5 hours.
The day he closed, they had to shut down the line. There was an 8-hour line at 4 a.m. So they just had to shut down the line even. It had an incredible, loyal fan base.
You eat there?
Yeah, I have.
See, the great thing about this, too, in doing the research for this, and we were talking that you, every time someone would tell a story, it would invariably include a restaurant or a diner or something, that you got to do research and you got to eat at many of these places before they closed.
When I started the project, I thought, oh, you know, these are old, lost restaurants, but sure enough, I had eaten at a great number of them, so it became personal for me.
Yeah.
And that added a nice element to the book.
It is. Doug writes, Doug, of all places, he says, when I'm asked about which restaurant I miss, I only have one answer. Ready for this, Bob Ferguson? The stand-up hot dog counter at the Woolworths on the Magnificent Mile. That is yet another place that I frequented. Did that surprise you,
Very
Greg?
Much so. I thought he was going to go, you know, something like the bakery.
Sure.
Or Le Francais or something. But no, he's a true fan of encased meats, as he puts it.
One of the great things about your book, and again, the title of it is Lost Restaurants of Chicago by Greg Borzo. You can go to gregborzo.com for all sorts of information. He's also going to be, write this down in your calendar, at 6 o'clock Thursday, January 24th in the Cindy Pritzker Auditorium of the Harold Washington Library. He's going to tell stories. It's a book party. It's free and open to the public. And he's going to give away $1,000 worth of free raffle prizes. You'd be lucky to get this book.
Better than the prizes, Doug Sohn will join me at the book launch.
And throw out meats to the ravenous crowd.
Oh, don't tell the library
cancel. Those guys at the library are good. The other thing that's stunning, and I don't mean to make too much of this, the book is just fun on the face of it. But what strikes me about it is the range of restaurants that have existed in this town, from the crummiest little diners with great food
and great followings
to, you know, Maxime de Paris in the Astor Towers basement.
Right.
I mean, were you surprised? You're a real Chicago historian and a real Chicago and Northwest Side kid. Did that surprise you?
The range surprised me,
yeah.
Especially because most of my life I've not been able to afford to eat at the nicer places, so I discovered all kinds of elegant and expensive restaurants like Charlie Trotter's that I'd heard of, but had never eaten at, never really looked into, way beyond my budget. So I kind of sampled these restaurants secondhand through this research and through talking to other people about their experiences.
Who had been there. I know Mark Shulman, Eli's son, who has taken the cheesecake that his father concocted at Eli's, the place for steak, and made a big business out of it. He must have been very helpful to you, too.
He was. It was wonderful to see his enthusiasm. Because everybody, you know, you call doesn't always call back,
you know,
as a reporter, a journalist. But Mark was wonderful, enthusiastic partner on the book. And you'd mentioned him, Eli Shulman,
sure,
and Mark Shulman earlier, and Don Roth and Rich Melman.
And Arnie Morton, yeah.
And those fellows, besides running great restaurants, they are the ones who came up with the idea for Taste of Chicago and talked Mayor Byrne into it.
Sure.
So Restaurants are more than just a place to eat. They can affect the whole life and reputation of a city.
The original Taste took place on Michigan Avenue, sort of basically right in front of the Tribune Tower, and the only major restaurant in the area that they all ran out of food, that first one, because I was there covering it. So everybody had to go downstairs to the Billy Goat, and Sam Cyanis made a fortune that day, not even being a formal participant in Taste of Chicago. We got to take another commercial break and then get some news when I'm keeping Greg Borzo here all the way until a quarter to, because it's never enough time to cover all this, which means you have to go buy Lost Restaurants of Chicago by Greg Borzo. We'll be right back. These Christmas music selections are courtesy of Elif Garris, who knows a great deal more about music than I do, but she's in the spirit, and these have been good. My guest for about another 10 minutes is Greg Borzo, and you would be you'd be idiotic not to buy and place under your Christmas tree or Hanukkah bush or whatever you got, Kwanzaa thing, the Lost Restaurants of Chicago. Anybody who is from Chicago will find in this book memories of a wonderful, wonderful sort, not just of food, but of the camaraderie that goes on in restaurants. Greg, I am intrigued by the chapter 11, Delis, Diners, and Dogs. I have always been astonished that there have not been more delis in this town. You know what I mean? With a sort of considerable Jewish American population. But you fondly remember Ashkenaz and a few others, but that's...
And there were so many right downtown, and they've been driven out by some of the chains and fast food restaurants.
I know. It is, I mean, you know, you are a great historian, but there's some very interesting cultural threads that run through this book, which is, for the most part, incredibly fun. Even fun for the picture of the very young Mark Shulman in a picture with Joe Ross, who was one of the stars of Car 54, Where Are You? That was when Eli, his father, ran Eli's Stage Delicatessen. The other thing, you highlight some of the bygone, and I was at these places too, soul food restaurants in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. They were very important. They really helped build and hold community on the south and the west side.
Restaurants, you're right about that, that restaurants did help define mm-hmm. communities.
A neighborhood or a community. People would come from far away to eat at
Greektown, for instance.
Or on the soul food side, you know, Army and Lou's. Or Edna's.
Those were great places. What about that Woolworths lunch counter that Doug Sohn talks about so fondly? I have memories of it. I obviously probably had a hot dog there at one point. But those kind of places were around, too.
Sure, but I never ate at that one in particular. But obviously it captivated Doug.
Surprisingly captivated Doug.
But there's so many crazy places, too. Carousel in the Sky.
Sure.
It had a carousel up on the top floor of the Morrison Hotel. And, who would go to a restaurant like that?
And there was the other one, the Pinnacle at what is now the W Hotel. Of course, I went to the Pinnacle. I have really had the most misspent life. Now I'm trying to think of how much money I spent on booze and food at all of these places. One of the notable places, and really a legendary place, I think, was, and I was only there a couple times as a young man, Fritzl's mm-hmm. was a huge deal, was it not? Why? It was at Staten Lake.
Close to City Hall, close to lots of attorney offices. So it was a gathering place for the power elite of Chicago.
And also the entertainment scene, too,
yeah,
because
sure.
you had the Chicago Theater from times like, you know,
right.
I don't know if Sinatra walked over for a quick Jack Daniels.
But it was apparently so well regarded by the city that the cops didn't write tickets when you double park out in front.
That's so classic. One of the owners of Fritzl's was a guy who ran the Chez Paris nightclub, which really looked like a dump, but was also one of the huge, big deal in this town.
It was extremely successful. It was on the third floor, and so it was known as Stairway to the Stars. And it attracted stars of stage, cinema, and music.
A
real hit parade.
The French food scene here is interesting, too. I remember so fondly Jacques' restaurant. Mm-hmm. Did you ever go there?
I never could afford that one. Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder why. Oh, I was a cab driver when I went to Jacques. Maybe I was just very frugal at the time. what do you think? I mean, Chicago has always been known as a sort of meat and potatoes town, in part because we have the stockyards down there. Your book makes me categorize it as just a food town.
Well, I think in the 60s it really opened up. It was pretty much meat and potatoes prior to that. But then with the whole interest in French food, Julia Child going on TV, The Art of French Cooking, Maxim's coming to Chicago, the first franchise of Maxim's outside of Paris, setting up shop in Chicago. That put Chicago on the map, and it grew from there.
What do you think now? Do you think Chicago, it's in the book, and you have to use it, but the word foodie drives me nuts. Because when I think of a foodie, I think of someone who goes from place to place to place to sample the new stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm the kind of guy, I am so glad that a place like Twin Anchors in Old Town is still there, because it's a touchstone for me.
Absolutely. And movies have been filmed there, even not only the ambiance and the food, but it's just... it's a magnet.
Yeah. And I think people are going to get that when they read this book. They're going to be reminded of the amazing times they had at, places as rarefied as the Empire Room and the Pump Room, and also places like Hot Dogs.
Or Flo's.
Flo's.
Where they had a trapeze artist swinging back and forth in front of the restaurant right on Randolph near State Street.
You asked me a few days ago, Rick, did you ever go to Flo's? And I'm like, yeah, of course. But the great thing about Flo's is we were talking, I said, great, they had great milkshake. It was just west of State Street on Randolph, right next to or very close to a place called Bear's Treasure Chest, which is kind of like a toy magic shop crazy place. But the great thing about Flo's, when I was at a certain age, like 12 or 13, is we would stand across the street and just stare. She was up about three stories.
That's right.
A couple stories. And they did have a woman in a kind of chorus girl outfit swinging on a swing. They did have good milkshakes, but the image of that girl now, an 85-year-old woman somewhere, if any of you are out there listening and you were the girl on the Flo's swing, please call me. Please call me. You are out doing a lot of promotion for this book, and that's really good. Greg has a great website, Greg Borzo, BORZO.com. He has written any number of books. Bob Ferguson, the engineer here, is, as am I, a huge fan of his books about Chicago fountains, but this one's going to just... go crazy. Be at the Cindy Pritzker Auditorium at the Harold Washington Library, 6 o'clock, 2009, January 24th.
2019.
Giving away $1,000 worth of free raffle prizes, travel, books, tours, food. Doug Sohn of Hot Dogs, who wrote the introduction of the book, will also be there. That's an event you shouldn't miss, and you could buy more books there, but you should buy one now. Come in there and have Greg autograph it. Greg.
And you should also eat out early and often, because today's restaurants are tomorrow's lost restaurants.
I know. We just heard about Ditka's Trackside. Dave Jennings just told us Ditka's Trackside is closing. Sabatino's is closing very soon. Yeah, cherish the restaurants you have. And then wallow in the restaurants you've lost in Greg Borzo's terrific book, Lost Restaurants of Chicago. Greg, one of my favorite authors, and you keep churning out these books that Bob Ferguson and I, among many, just adore.
Thank you.
So happy holidays and all that jazz.
Bon appétit.
Bon appétit.